Reading is from Philippians, page 248 in the New Testament, chapter 4, verses 1 to 9. So then, my brothers, how dear you are to me, and how I miss you, how happy you make me, and how proud I am of you. This then, dear brothers, is how you should stand firm in your life in the Lord. Euodia and Syntyche, please, I beg you, try to agree as sisters in the Lord. And you too, my faithful partner, I want you to help these women, for they have worked hard with me to spread the gospel together with Clement and all my other fellow workers whose names are in God's book of the living. May you always be joyful in your union with the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Show a gentle attitude towards everyone. The Lord is coming soon. Don't worry about anything, but in all your prayers, ask God for what you need, always asking him with a thankful heart. And God's peace, which is far beyond human understanding, will keep your hearts and minds safe in union with Christ Jesus. In conclusion, my brothers, fill your minds with those things that are good and that deserve praise, things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honorable. Put into practice what you learnt and received from me, both from my words and from my actions. And the God who gives us peace will be with you.
You may have forgotten, but we're actually at the end of Mark chapter 9 at the moment. Although the last time I preached there was 2 months ago, we've had Easter and celebrations and anniversaries and me going on study leave. But I've been looking at that passage where Jesus says, if your hand causes you to lose your faith, it's better to chop it off and enter life with one hand than to have both hands and be cast into hell. And you might recall I spent 3 weeks looking at this idea of hell and how I understand that chapter, but I'm wanting to come back and look at the other part of that, the idea of entering life. And so I've prepared a number of really awesome sermons on our resurrection hope, and it was my plan to begin that today, but something happened while I was away that I need to talk to you about. And it's not actually a sermon, it's a talk. It's a story that I want to tell, but it's actually a confession because something happened that has caused me a great deal of embarrassment, and really I'd rather not be talking about this at all, but I can't be silent about it, and I wanted to take the very first opportunity I could to tell you all together. And a lot of people know about it, and so chances are you would find out sooner or later. And I think that if you found out from others and not from me, you'd think, wow, that's weird. Why didn't Andrew tell us? It involved the police. And
you too, Andrew.
And people in Invercargill know about it. There's some people in Te Ano who know about it. In Queenstown also, some people in Dunedin. Christchurch, Nelson, New Plymouth, St. James Church in their official capacities, Melbourne. So it was actually an international event. My friend Chris and I were helicopter rescued off a mountain by the search and rescue. And you might have three questions that are going through your head at the moment. One might be, well, hold on a minute, we thought you were on study leave, not up a mountain. And all I can say is that Richard Dawson the previous moderator of the Presbyterian Church, was most emphatic when I told him I was taking study leave. He said, make sure you do something relaxing and enjoyable. And the second thing is that I actually learned a hang of a lot. Not out of books, I might add, but... Yes, so your second question might be, how did we get ourselves into such a predicament that we needed to be rescued? And to tell that story, which actually involves a great deal of embarrassment, and I know there'll be people here who would be very interested to know how that all panned out. It would be a story about a plan and then changing a plan to accommodate somebody else, and then starting too late in the day and then relying on a 20-year-old memory of the route and then not taking gear with us that we should have taken. Had a lot of good gear back in the car, but not with us. And not turning back when all the signs were that we should turn back. And so I'll skip over that embarrassing story. because the third question might be, how did you get out of that predicament that you got yourselves in? And that's actually quite a beautiful story of faith, hope, and love. And it's a wonderful story of answered prayer and the way so many awesome human beings, and I think God really does work through human beings for the most part, who all came together. Some were paid professionals, some were volunteers, to make this thing happen. And it's also a story of incredible courage and tenacity and perseverance. I'm not talking about my friend Chris and I. I'm talking about Marie. One of our rescuers said at the end, he said, if you want to know who the real hero in this story is, and he pointed at me, and he said, it's your wife. So that's a much more interesting story to tell. And so that story begins as night was falling a week and a half ago on Tuesday the 30th of April. Chris and I were at about 1,450 metres above sea level on the side of a mountain in Fiordland. And I've got a photo that I took earlier that will help you to picture the scene. So that was earlier in the day. That was one of the times. I'm actually embarrassed to show you that photo because everything in that photo says turn back. But we didn't. There was a voice missing that had always been present with Chris and I in our climbing. And because we've been climbing together on and off for 20 years or more. And there'd always been a voice of sanity and wisdom that would say, it's not on, let's turn back. But that voice was absent this time. And one of the things that I've learned is that it's so important that we hear every voice. And so the ridge you can see in the middle of that picture, not in the foreground, was the ridge that we were working our way up. And just where you see the cloud touching on that point is about where we found ourselves at about 6:30 on Tuesday night, and it became very dark very quickly. I thought my phone was out of battery. Chris's phone couldn't get any service. Our friend Matt, who had turned back earlier, he kind of knew where we were, but I think he had much more confidence in our ability than was warranted, and so we made a decision. We've got to stay put. We didn't have very good choices at all. We found a spot. It was a very skinny ridge. There were some rocks up on this side, some higher rocks on this side with a little bit of shelter where we parked ourselves. Unfortunately, there was a rock between us, and so we couldn't cuddle up. That would have helped a lot. And we weren't all that well equipped. I had four skinny layers on. Chris had three better layers on. We had triple gloves. I had two layers on my legs. We had a woolly hat and a small backpack that we used for insulation for our hips. And the first thing we did was we prayed. I said, Chris, we need to commend ourselves to God and pray that we will get through this time. And so we did. And very quickly we became very cold, and it was a long night. And at about 10:15, something happened that changed everything for us. My phone started ringing, and I was able to answer it. And it was Marie wondering why I hadn't checked in with her, and I was able to speak in a very clear way. I said, we are in a precarious position. We're on the east, a ridge on the east side of Mount Burns. We need a helicopter in the morning. We are very cold, and my phone is out of juice. Have you got that? And she repeated the message back to me, and then my phone went dead. And Chris and I rejoiced. And we thanked God, and we knew things would start happening. And, you know, I think sometimes that the thing that God requires of us is sometimes very simple. Hang in there. Don't give up. Choose life. And so we did our very best to look after ourselves and to look after each other. We swapped our position from time to time because one spot was slightly more sheltered than the other. It was a very, very clear night. The Milky Way was stunningly beautiful, but the wind was gusting, and the spot we were on was on a bit of about a 20-degree slope, I suppose. And at about 2:00, we heard chocka 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 chocka. We heard a helicopter. We'd actually been hearing helicopters for hours, actually, but this one was a real one. And what had happened was after this phone call, Marie rang. The very first thing Marie did was got the St. James Church directory and found Andrew Wong too, who is the search and rescue coordinator here in Taranaki. And she rang the number. It was actually Jenny's number, who was in Melbourne. That's how the international connection came in. And so she gave, when you make a phone call after 10 o'clock, you actually have to give an explanation as to why. And so, and then Marie rang Andrew, and he said, well, look, ring 111. Got on to the search and rescue guy in the Invercargill police, a wonderful guy by the name of Dave. Marie got Robin, Chris's wife, into the call, and also Matt, our friend, who kind of knew where we were and who was back in range now. And there was a big conversation. And there was two questions they were asking. What gear have they got? Marie felt certain that I would have my wonderfully warm down jacket. I didn't. It was in the car about 10 kilometres away. One of the things I've learned is I've got a deeper appreciation for the idea of wrathful love. I was covered with both. and the other question, Matt couldn't be sure what we had with us. And the other question was, why are they describing their situation as precarious now, but only wanting a helicopter in the morning? Why aren't they wanting a helicopter now? And Marie said, well, they'll be thinking that you can't get a search going until first light anyway. And she said, look, I know that man. I've known him for 40 years, and he won't be asking for a helicopter if he doesn't need one. And so Marie and Robin both can be very tenacious people and very persuasive people, and so a decision was made to call Southern Lakes Helicopters in Te Anau. And the person who picked up the phone was Richard Hayes, Sir Richard Hayes, the most widely respected and experienced rescue helicopter pilot in this country. And he said, this is what we're going to do. and it would take a brave policeman to say, no, no, you don't have the authority to make those decisions. And so he got an alpine cliff rescue guy, and they went up, and we heard them searching the ridge. They got a big spotlight on the helicopter, and I shone my torch, and he came right up on us. Apparently, the alpine, or rather the night vision goggles they've got, will multiply any light source by 30,000 times. It's a bit like putting on Frodo's Ring of Power. You know, you, suddenly you see a whole new world. And so they hovered there for a bit, and I'm told, because we did a big debrief with the police afterwards, and we told them the whole embarrassing story, that first one that I'm skipping over quickly. And they said, look, you know, you guys did a bit that wasn't good, and you should have had stuff with you that you didn't, but we come across a lot of people who do a whole lot worse. And when it came to the crunch, you guys did a lot that was right. And so we were told that the conversation went something like this. We've found them. They're not wearing the gear that we were told that they would be wearing. They're up and they're moving around. It's very windy. It's too dangerous to try for a winch. I'm frightened that I'll blow them off with my rotor downdraft. They're in a prick of a place. Were the words that were used. And the alpine cliff rescue guy said it's too dangerous to get out at night. And so they did a big kind of recce of the area and went back to base. And Chris and I thought, they know where we are, and they're on the job. And our job is to get through this. And Marie has asked me, she said, what did you think about all night? One of the effects of hypothermia is that it's actually hard to concentrate. You get uncoordinated. But one thought that came to my mind a lot was that throughout history there have been many, many people who have endured very, very horrible situations and have come through. And I thought, well, gee, surely we can get through a cold night. And there's a very important book written by Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor, a psychologist who survived 3 years in the labour camps, and he observed many people live and many people die, and he said that human beings are capable of enduring great hardship provided they have a reason to want to live. And I thought about all the reasons I had for wanting to live. I thought about Marie and our children and our grandchildren, and I thought about Chris and his wife and his children and grandchildren, and the idea of me coming back out and him not I couldn't bear that thought, and I'm sure he couldn't bear the thought the other way around. Often in the past, Robin, his wife, would say to us when we were going away on a trip, if you come back dead, I'm going to kill you. Well, we didn't want to come back dead. And I also thought of you folk here at St. James. And these words that we've read, my dear brothers and sisters, how dear you are to me, how happy you make me, and how proud I am of you. And this passage in Philippians has been a favourite of both Marie and I for a very long time, and the idea about don't worry about anything, but in all your prayers ask God for what you need. And we were asking God for what we needed. And he also talks about filling your minds with those things that are good and that deserve praise, things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honourable. And so tried to fill our minds with positive things. We tried to look out for each other. We swapped places from time to time to get the better shelter and to swap it around. And so the night went on, and then suddenly it was dawn, and we could see. And what had happened in the meantime was that a call went out to Queenstown. A rescue team was put together. A guy by the name of Rupert put together two Alpine guys. He was one of them, Alpine Cliff Rescue guys, and two paramedics. Rupert was the guy who talked about Marie being the real hero in this story. And at 4 o'clock, they were driving from Queenstown to Tiano. At 5 o'clock, Richard Hayes said, send them back. We're all clagged in here. I won't be able to get up. They called a guy by the name of Justin, who is a helicopter pilot out of Queenstown. And by 8 o'clock, this helicopter came over the top of us. I think 7 o'clock was the coldest before the sun came up. Chris's speech had become quite slurred. And we ate some food, we waited, and then this helicopter came right over the top and went way across to the other side of the valley. And we thought, what they're doing is they're having a real good look around. I might add also, Richard Hayes also said that at 2 o'clock the air temperature was 5 degrees, but with the wind, the chill factor was minus 10. And he said, bad weather's coming in and we've got to get a helicopter up at first light. And so 8 o'clock it turns up, and so they dropped off some people on a ridge way over there, on a plateau rather, and because weight was critical, and then they dropped these two Alpine guys off about 600 metres away from where we were on a little flat bit that they found. And we had moved around to watch their progress, and we found a spot that was out of the wind, and the sun was on us. And so by the time these guys got to us, we were actually quite warmed up. And they turn up with these big packs saying, you need something warm? Oh, actually, we're okay. They gave us some food. I had half a Cookie Time biscuit. And they put a harness on us and a tether and walked us back down that sort of territory, you know, slippery snowgrass, and we got to the helicopter at about 11 o'clock, and first time I've ever been in a helicopter, actually. And we got taken back to Borland Lodge, and they checked us out. We've gotten out of it remarkably well, really. I've got a bit of numbness in some of my toes, but otherwise, none of them are black or have fallen off. And I checked out again at the emergency department in Invercargill, and so it's been quite an experience. And and what's really struck me out of it is just this sense of God being faithful and good, and answering, I believe, the prayers that we put up, and many others that we're putting up on our behalf. So that's my story, that's my confession, and I'm perfectly happy to tell the earlier story too, and there'll be some who want to know those details. But as you can tell, I've skipped across those details rather quickly. And so we're having our communion meal now. So I'd like to ask the serving elders to come forward.